Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's go around the NFL here on a Texans game day. Week one, largely in the books outside of two Monday Night Football games. There's the late game between the Chargers and the Raiders at 9. But, of course, the game that we're all most interested in, a huge game for the Houston Texans as they welcome in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's the home opener at NRG, and it's a Liberty whiteout. And most importantly, it is the battle to stay away from 0-2 because that is a really tough place to be. I was talking about it earlier, and I gave you the statistic that I had seen per Jesse Palmer. Since 1990, 12.2% of teams that started 0-2 have made the playoffs. Like, that's not somewhere that you want to be. You obviously want to be on the other side where you're 2-0. And interestingly enough, I was looking, obviously you can't get there as the Texans, but I was looking at the teams that are 2-0, because obviously the Colts are in that group of teams that would now have probably a 78.6% chance of making the playoffs. There's the Bills, who are 2-0. Makes sense. Bengals, who are 2-0, which we'll talk about that here in a second. I mentioned the Colts. Those are the teams in the AFC. Then you have the Eagles. Makes sense. The Packers. Sure. And then three teams in the NFC West. The Niners, the Cardinals, and the Rams. And then the Seahawks are 1-1, and their one loss is against the Niners. The AFC West. What's happening over here?
The only teams they lose to are themselves. They're amongst themselves. Look, and the Cardinals are something of, I mean, they're always like one of those squads that are sort of like pesky.
They almost blew it yesterday,
man.
Yeah,
they almost did, but I don't know if they're necessarily legit, but they are 2-0. Makes a difference.
The end of that game was disgusting. Panthers.
God, yes.
It was 27-15 at a point, and then the Panthers scored.
It was 27-9 or whatever it was. I thought that game was over.
Panthers scored 13 fourth quarter points. It was just ugly. I'm glad that, I don't know if you were like me watching this on Red Zone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And with Red Zone, once you had the last game, they cut that joint off. That was the last game. I was like, thank you.
I don't want to
see any more of this. Let me know when it's over. A game for which I did not have that feeling. The second game that was with that in the afternoon slate. Eagles-Chiefs. The Eagles end up, as I mentioned, 2-0 versus the Chiefs, a 20-17 victory there. This makes the Chiefs 0-2 for the first time since 2014 when they missed the playoffs.
Yeah. So no one is, or maybe I'm wrong, is anybody here going to say, yeah, you know, the reign is over. They're not going to get, nobody's going to say that, right?
Not quite. No.
But I think you need to say they've got, like, it's not just they played a couple of really good teams that you know, and that's going to happen, and they barely, you know, got beat, et cetera, because they were kind of in it a little bit yesterday as well. You can't say they don't have problems. You can't say they don't have problems. They have problems.
I wonder if the chat, because I've seen a couple people, I don't know how to feel about this, but they kind of looking at Mahomes a little bit like it's something going on. Because, like, I understand they struggling offensively, but I seen a couple people saying, man, Mahomes throwing downfield ain't the same how it was before. I wonder if people starting to look at Mahomes a little bit.
Well, that's part of the issue. They have issues. They might, because of Mahomes and the defense, and they might be able to rally and get there again, kind of like the Astros, which we're going to get to in a little bit. They might be able to rally, but are they the same boogeyman, to use the Astros term that Figgy likes to use?
No. And, I mean, look, you're looking at their wide receiving core, and I'll stay to the wide receiving core. We can talk a little bit about Travis Kelce if we want. Tyquan Thornton looks like their best guy right now. And I don't say this to be any level of like negative to Tyquan Thornton, but that's not what you want.
No.
And they've been dealing with this for a while. But then with Xavier Worthy's injury, you look up and you go, oh, yeah, this is what happens when this thing gets depleted. And as much as that defense is good, it does not look like at the same level. Now, it's early on in the season. I think we can use that caveat for a lot of teams, understanding that with the length of the season, teams ramp up, especially without, you know, the benefit of as much preseason type stuff. They specifically absolutely do this time and time again. So that's one of the things that should keep the end and decline talk at bay, because they do this thing where they go through the season, and then by the time you hit December, they're starting to charge up. But as of right now, you do look up and you go, hey, just schedule-wise alone, you're put in this weird place where you're 0-2, and it doesn't look like by any means the best version of the Chiefs.
It really is to me kind of like what the Astros are. Like, you know, they're the Chiefs. You know, they're the Astros. You know, they have Mahomes. You know, they have Altuve.
They're always going to be a threat.
They're always going to be a threat. And I guess they are, and both sides still are. But they're not as scary, and they have issues.
And even Travis Kelce, man, he's looking like he's about 37, 38 right now, man.
Yeah, he is.
Like a lot of drops, that drop that end up being an interception.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, this might be over with. I was talking to Ron about this because he was kind of going crazy on Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's still Travis Kelce though, man.
Haven't we said that about the Astros too? Like, oh, that's still.
Yeah. I'm like, even though Kelce, I think last year he had like maybe 800 yards or close to, I forgot what it was, but I'm like, that's still good.
Mm-hmm.
But he might be right. It might be towards the end.
Yeah. And don't forget, we got like the equivalent of best shape of my life talk for Travis Kelce, where he was like, yeah, you know, I needed to slim down and get myself
always
back
a bad son.
Yeah. So maybe that's how this thing is coming around. I don't know. One of those teams in that division will have a nice lead over the Chiefs because Chargers Raiders tonight as well. Some other things around the NFL. So the Chiefs, obviously one of those teams in the AFC that you're looking at as some level contender if the Texans prove to be the type of team that we believe them to be. One of those other teams you would think is the Cincinnati Bengals. However, it seems like they are going to be without their quarterback for a good 3 months as a possibility. This turf toe thing is popping up. And we're
third-degree turf toe that requires surgery?
Yeah, this thing.
What is that?
This is wild what we're seeing here. In fact, can I get Marty Jaramillo? He was on CBS Sports kind of describing, because we've seen turf toe pop up enough. I kind of wanted to get a little bit more of an explanation on what is happening here, as Joe Burrow obviously going to miss some time due to it.
Turf toe is a tear of the underside of the ligaments of the big toe. So if this is a foot, it'd be the underside of the ligament. So it's a hyperextension injury. Extremely painful. It significantly affects running, push off, changes direction. And why is it so important? Well, 60 to 70% of our body weight is supported by that big toe. Surgery is quite rare, but these ligaments still need to heal. So I fully expect them to miss between 3 and 6 weeks. Now, there's a little bit of a litmus test at about week 3. What is that? At about week 3, they actually customize an insole for his cleat that has a steel plate on the undersurface of his foot to basically offload that big toe. Now, when they test him with that steel plate, if he still has instability and pain with running and push-off, unfortunately, then he still needs time to rest. So that's a real litmus test at about week 3. But great.
So there you go. Like, that's what we're looking at. But, man, I think we're getting to this place where now we're missing, you know, Joe Burrow again. This is yet another injury for him. It's every year, though.
What, since 2020, 21?
I mean, the Bengals have to eat this because that line did not look very good. And the defense, again, does not look solid enough. Like, the Bengals might be in a place where it's early. I don't think you can quite do this. But I'm in the place where I'm almost like, all right, we can write them off.
Almost. Yeah, I think you can, because he said 3 to 6 weeks. I've also seen maybe 2 months or more. That's a big issue. When
ESPN is saying 3 months.
3 months.
On theirs. Now, of course, like he said, depending on the severity, you might be able to have within like 3 weeks to a month, kind of see if there's a way to get this done. But if with that kind of timeline, do wonder if that's even anywhere near.
Yeah, I mean, it might come back to bite people who are agreeing with you, but I agree with you. I think you're almost to the place to just write them off.
And wow. Yeah. Wow. Which that is a little bit of, I hate to use it, looking at injury that way, but a little bit of a godsend to the Texans. Mm-hmm. If they can get their own house in order. Like, we're still very much in that part of the season where the Texans have to look internally, establish your cruising altitude, and then we can look around. But once they get to that point, it does feel like there's maybe fewer of those teams that'll be in that same, stratosphere once you get to that point for the AFC. Some other things around the NFL. I want to go back to the AFC South, where the Jacksonville Jaguars, we mentioned that they lost this weekend. There's some things happening amongst them. Brian Thomas Jr., who is the best receiver for the Jaguars, he had a fantastic rookie year last year, looked really good. did not look that same way yesterday, and he kind of looked afraid at times in contact. This was Liam Cohen, the head coach of the Jags, being asked about Brian Thomas Jr.'s play and the seeming avoidance of contact from him.
Yeah, I gotta go watch it, you know, and just go figure out what that, you know, was all about and what it looked like. Yeah. I gotta go take a look at that.
Boy, he was fighting it, wasn't he?
He wanted to say something there. I don't know what it was, but he wanted to say something.
I wish they had a little truth serum or like the narrator. What he's really thinking is, you know, blah, blah, blah.
What he's really thinking is, why are you being a little bee going across the middle?
That's it, Figgy.
It's not 1995. Yeah,
no, look.
Jason Senior Horn ain't in there to hit you.
That's the worst thing that's the worst reputation an NFL player can have. That you use the word too, afraid. When you go there, that's hard to shake, number one, and it's hard to shake in your own locker room. That was a, and by the way, awful look for him. There was at least two or three plays where just cowering.
He was, like he was expecting the big hit, just kind of,
And the one in the front of the end zone, it wasn't even like he was afraid to go get the ball. Like the ball was just above his head, and he kind of like short-armed it, alligator-armed it. Like, just go get the ball, you know?
He better be hurt or something.
It's crazy. I don't know. It was a bad, bad look.
And you're talking about, like, being afraid and how that's a, you know, kind of a really bad thing to have put upon you. It's one thing if there was a certain era in the NFL where absolutely, like, that was Michael Irvin's whole thing is he's not afraid to go over the middle.
Yeah.
We're in 2025 where that's cool. Unless you play against the Texans. Like, that's the interesting thing is, who do you got next up on the schedule? Yeah. Brian Thomas Jr.?
Yeah.
Aziz Alshire? No?
C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah. I wonder if that's going to be mentioned. Yeah,
you might want to resolve that. Otherwise, you're going to be in a world of pain in various different ways. Somebody said Texas lay in the wood week 3, and I appreciate you throwing in that pause in there. I understand what you're doing there. So, yeah, that's probably not a good look for the Jacksonville Jaguars. There are some other things around the NFL. And mind you, Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year, which is like $250 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. I talked about injuries. First and foremost, this overtime game, I've got to admit, it changed my perspective for just that game only, where I was like, usually, you know my stance, overtime, get the game over with, let's go to the next one. You had Cowboys and Giants, a high-scoring game went into overtime, and I'm like, I want this to be old-school college where they just go back and forth. Because it was such nonsense, this football game. And ultimately, we get to a point where I think that you might be looking at a kicker in Brandon Aubrey that is the new it kicker. Like, the one that comes to mind for me is Sebastian Janikowski, but I'm sure there's other ones you can think of.
Janikowski be it, yeah.
I think he might be the new it kicker.
Yeah.
Brian Schottenheimer
says... What was that guy from New Orleans, Anderson? Gary Anderson?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
They
kick a, what is it, 62-yarder?
64, wasn't
64-yarder in order to win that one in overtime, even though I was rooting for a tie, I'm not going to lie. Like, both of these teams deserve
that
a tie.
That would have been great if it ended in the tie.
Oh, gosh.
But Brian Schottenheimer comes in after and he says, I would have run him out there from 70.
I mean, Brandon, you're right. He is the, you know, like the Hall of Fame kickers, you know, the Gary Andersons, the Janikowskis. He is a weapon. I mean, the way they were playing it was just like, all right, let's just get to the 48, guys.
And they really were. I was like,
let's just get to the 48.
Did they kick it on third?
I don't remember if they did or not now, but just an absolute weapon that is, you know, that's one of those things, very low key, but not low key. Like, he becomes like fourth quarter, you have to start game planning around the opposing kicker.
Yeah.
How often does that happen?
You got to try to keep him out of the field goal range.
You have to risk more. I mean, that's what the Giants were doing.
Anderson is who you were
Morton
thinking
Anderson.
Thank
Morton
you.
Anderson.
Thank
Morton
you, 832. Yeah. But yeah, no, like he made some huge kicks. In fact, he made a kick at the end of regulation in
Gary
order to
Anderson
tie that
was
game.
The one that missed the kick in Minnesota.
That's right. I was like, he's a kicker, right?
Yes.
Not quite the same. But like I thought that was crazy. The Cowboys do get the victory. However, it might be Pyrrhic in some ways because they end up losing their starting center, Cooper Beebe, for 6 to 8 weeks with a high ankle sprain.
And that's something that they have to rely on. By the way, you know, some people might need to be apologizing back to the question of the day to Dak Prescott.
Looks good.
He looked really good.
He looked good. Yeah. Although, on the other side, so did Russell Wilson.
Where did that come from?
He looked really good, too. He threw up that punt.
He's been a deep ball passer, like, since he left.
Lately?
Since he left... Yeah.
Denver?
Probably Denver, because I was like, when he left Seattle, he was really bad in Denver.
Yeah, he did it a lot in Pittsburgh, too. Mm-hmm. That one year he did it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just him and Pickens. Chuck it up their dog. Yep. We'll make this work.
But, when he threw up that punt, I think that was overtime, threw up that punt, I'm like, yeah.
I will say,
that's the experience.
The Cowboys' defense looks M-A-L-O bad.
Oh, wow.
Especially when it comes to deep passing. They ran like 90-something percent zone.
Mm-hmm.
This is not hard to tell. That's so unusual for a team at this level of football. Even zone-heavy teams.
You're going to lose.
90-some percent. Plus, I think one of those catches, like the Malik Nabers catch that everybody lost their minds about, the deep safety in that was it like a box safety, one of those guys that you come up, you expect to be a thumper.
Yeah.
And he's back, and I'm like, oh, that's probably not the way you play it, except that's what Matt Eberflus is over there doing, is having that guy roll back that way. And then real quick before we go, another – what the hell are they doing here? Did you see what happened for the Steelers as the Seahawks beat the Steelers in Pittsburgh? Caleb Johnson, the running back who came out of Iowa, had like a very bizarre instance in the 31-17 win for Seattle, where Seattle kicks it off after going up 17-14 early in the, I believe it was the fourth quarter, and it bounces in the landing zone as you want it to do. Caleb Johnson kind of touches it, or like doesn't touch it.
It just nicked his hand.
But it just keeps rolling, and he just runs towards the sideline, and the ball is still in play.
This is clearly like the rule has not been adequately received from the kicker. Once it hits the landing zone, it is like it's like every other kickoff.
You got to make a decision. Yeah.
And and even in the old rules, if it hits in the landing zone and you touch it, it doesn't matter like which rule was in play here.
Well, actually, kickoffs are live.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Like you have to down the, and he just didn't down.
You got to get the ball and make a decision.
So touchdown. He said, "I just made a mistake. Got to stick to it, move on, and just continue to get better every day." And Mike Tomlin was like, "It's poor judgment by a young player," and that's basically what he let it stay as.
Mm-hmm.
Buddy, you better not let that happen again.
No.
Like that's a great way to get yourself out of here. And I know Caleb Johnson is a highly regarded running back. He is solid. That there's not a lot of tolerance for that in the NFL.
If he wasn't that, he would have been cut.
Oh,
if he was like a straight up special teamers or DeAndre Carter type
on that squad,
he would have got cut.
Yeah.
And I leave you with this, John Lopez. Apparently, the Ravens were planning to draft Shedeur Sanders in April, according to Adam Schefter. But when the Sanders family heard that, he let them know that he didn't want to be a situation behind a star quarterback like Lamar Jackson.
You want to be compared to Lamar Jackson?
No, not compared. Sit behind.
Yeah. Ain't going to happen.
Can you imagine making the decision where you're like, nope, don't want to be in that organization, and then you end up with the Browns?
Yeah.
I kind of get it, to be honest, man.
I do too.
I get it, because he ain't going to play behind Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. And if I'm already in the fifth round, I might as well go to a better situation.
Yeah.
I feel like, and maybe I just value the organizational structure of the Ravens too highly, because I do understand it. You're not, Lamar Jackson is entrenched for at least 5-6 years.
Yeah.
However, it did feel like you would get an opportunity to actually be in a good organization, which would be helpful.
And I think from his point of view too, he thought he was going to be a first round pick.
Sure.
Oh yeah.
And you in the fifth round now at this point. The last thing you want to do is sit behind a Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson, who ain't going nowhere anytime soon.
Exactly.
Well, right now, apparently, there's reports, I can't remember, I think it was on ESPN Cleveland, that he's not even running the scout team right now. So, things not good.
Yeah, I mean, why would he, man?
I don't know.
I don't know.
They shouldn't have drafted him, to be honest.
They are asking the question up there, like, why is he here if you're not you're not even going to let him run the scout team, help him develop, if whatever development you can get there.
Yeah.
All right, that's around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610 after what was a surprisingly good Sunday slate of games all the way through. And Monday, got to try and carry up that same energy as the Texans face off against the Bucks at 6 p.m. at NRG. All right, coming up next, let's talk, though, about the weekend for the Astros, where now they are no longer leading the AOS. Where's the hope, and have you lost it? 713-572-4610. We talk about it next.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I know it's a Texans game day Monday here on Sports Radio 610, and we will return to breaking down and getting ready for this kickoff at 6 p.m. versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we're really ready for this. Like, we're already
in tailgate. You know it's game day?
We're already in tailgate mode. We're already one fireball
in. Yeah.
We are one fireball in. We got some barbecue in the studio, courtesy of Enough Said Tailgate. Shout out to our guy Marty, who came up to hang out with us a little bit. So we are tailgating. We are ready for it. But we do want to cover the spectrum of everything. And it was a big weekend for the Astros this weekend. They win the series against the Atlanta Braves, 2-1. And yet and still, they find themselves no longer at the top of the AL West. It is the Mariners' lead in the AL West. They finally done that thing that we were looking at them and seeing, will they be able to do it over years and years? Here they are at in the lead in the AL West after a 4-game sweep of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim themselves. And so, where's the hope? Do you have indeed still hope for the Astros? Because they did find some runs this weekend. You got to at least give them that. They found some runs, including 6 runs to give some support to Hunter Brown and give him a win on Saturday. And you found some crazy runs out of a Zach Cole.
How about that? That
on
was
Friday as well.
You talk about an unforgettable night. What did he have? 3 hits, the home run on the first pitch that he ever saw. I don't know if I can go so far as to say Zach Cole is hope. But I mean, obviously he produced. I think it's hard right now. Let's just kind of set up where the Astros are.
Okay,
you mentioned it. They're finally not in first place for the first time since Lord knows how long. They're a game back of the Mariners. They're only 2 games up in the wild card against the team that they're facing starting tonight.
Yeah, that's another thing I have not mentioned yet.
Yeah.
Hey, the Silver Boot Series, that continues.
It's
starting tonight at Daikin Park.
Yeah, so since the end of the, pitching, Fromber had another bad outing, for sure. So you got 6 games in the next 7 days against the Rangers and Mariners, the 2 teams that you are fighting for the division and the wild card. That's important. if you didn't think other series were important, that's important. And then the other thing is you're starting Jason Alexander, and then TBD.
Feel good about the Jason Alexander, by the way.
Absolutely, you do.
Like that, he's been solid, and it seems like I feel a little bit better because again, that was a road trip. Mm-hmm. You came back from a long one at that. When you went Arlington to Toronto to Atlanta, and now you get to come back home.
Mm-hmm.
If the home field advantage actually exists for this team. Jason Alexander, on the bump will do well. Give him a little bit of run support and you might be able to do something.
Yeah, and the next 2 schedule starters are named TBD, so we'll see about that. But you're facing Jack Leiter, Merrill Kelly, and Jacob DeGrom.
Oh, that's not fun.
That's their best 3 pitchers.
And your best opportunity to get a good hit is Jack Leiter, because of late he hasn't been that solid. But
that's
DeGrom has been great.
Yeah.
And he's coming off the high of playing where it all started, because I think the Rangers were up in at Citi Field. I almost called it Shea Stadium. Up at Citi Field recently. So, like, he got a little bit of that. I wonder if that gives him a high that he brings in. So, yeah, no, that's a tough. And Merrill Kelly's been pretty solid himself as well. That's a tough 3 opposing pitchers that you got here.
Yeah, and so then on top of that, and again, we're finding hope. We're looking for hope. We're just trying to set up where they're really up against it right now. On top of that, not just Fromber, who, by the way, is 1-7 with a 6.41 ERA since the end of July. I believe that's 9 starts, 8 or 9 starts. And then Jose Altuve did something to his foot and sat out again yesterday, so we'll see what that is. So the hope goes back to the things that you've been relying on, the new, basically new acquisitions, Carlos Correa, Yordan Alvarez.
Yordan has been fantastic.
Now, he slumped a little bit, but he broke out of it.
Yes,
of course.
He did.
So, I mean,
that's a fantastic feeling for me, is seeing Yordan break out of the slump, because he had been really good since he came back, and getting him back to hitting well. I don't have to talk about it again. We know he puts fear in the opposing pitchers and their defense, and they have to account for him. And that's something that's been much needed for this Astros team all season long.
So here we are. So we're looking at Carlos Correa, Yordan Alvarez, and players that you didn't really expect would be cornerstones moving into the final 12 games of the season. You know, guys like Yonner Diaz and Victor Caratini and all that. So it's got to be on the offense, and it's got to be the guys that have sort of surprised you this year, certainly in the last the second half of the season. The offense, it's got to be the offense. Is that hope?
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, it's all, if it is, that's all it is. Like, I can, yeah. I don't have enough to say definitively that I can trust it by any means. And I'd be insane to say that on these airways or just, you know, any streets in Houston. Mm-hmm. I would be, if I'm out there at the blue lot later today, I ain't telling no one for certain that, yeah, man, that this Astros offense is coming. I can't say that.
No, you can't.
It is all hope that mm-hmm. I'm dealing with. But you know that at least you have a few guys in Hunter Brown, in Jason Alexander. Fromber's out of that I guess circle of trust, right? To borrow from the fellows of the morning show, I know that I have a few guys that if I give them some run support, we have some good feels. You just need to make sure that you give them some run support. I was happy to see that against the Braves, but admittedly the Braves aren't that good, so that's going to be the challenge. Not just against the Rangers, but as you mentioned, also the Mariners. And I don't love the idea that you're circling back around to the Mariners, and you will get Hunter Brown cool. That means Fromber's going to go up against them, and yeah. I don't feel like good about that at all.
No, I don't.
And that's the one that you need more, right? Because they're the ones that are actually ahead of you when it comes to the AL West race.
Yeah, and the division. And then there's Altuve. We mentioned his foot. He's been obviously struggling for the most part mightily for the last 3 weeks, whatever it's been. But you do want to get him back. Now, Dana Brown said yesterday in the pregame show that he does think it'll just be a couple of days. Again, believe what you will. But you do need to get, as much as he struggled, you do need to get Altuve back just for the threat, if nothing else, like you do with Yordan.
Well, yes. However, this is the opposite of hope, which, again, I'm knocking down this segment as we go through it.
I was too.
The tough part about it is, with Jose Altuve, a lot of the things that I have concerns about, if his foot is hurting and if he's managing that pain, it makes it worse. Like Jose Altuve as a batter, that foot is going to be very important to him generating pressure or generating power rather and doing what he does at the plate. Talk less of him on the base paths, which we already don't need to talk about, but him playing defense.
Yeah.
Like him, he's going to be playing a lot of second base, maybe some left field. And, you know, that mobility we already know is lacking at this point in his career. How much more so does that happen with a foot that he's having to, you know, really thug it out through?
We'll know a week from today. We'll know if these are just it's a pipe dream or if they're out or whatever. Even if you just maybe take one of the two series but win a game in the other one, I think you'll have a chance. But the hope is fading fast, man. And now that they're not in first place, it's got to be a kickstart and it's got to happen today.
No, it absolutely does. Like this, these are the ones that you absolutely need. You need to keep the Rangers at bay, and you need to claw back an opportunity at having the tiebreaker against the Mariners. Because clearly,
The series is on the line
with the number of games that you have here, and of course, that's going all the way through the weekend. Which maybe we have to leave that where it is and deal with that once we get there.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to get one, push the Rangers at bay in these next 3 days. But then you'll need to really get that tiebreaker and then just the wins. Every win is going to be absolutely necessary here in this really quick sprint. We've moved from the marathon of the season to now you were really in the quick sprint. So whatever you can get, if you get a Zach Cole game like you did on Friday, great. But everything is under the microscope right now.
The other thing that that Dana Brown said in the pregame show is Isak Paredes might be back for the Seattle series. I mean, that's got to be as big a hope as anything, even though you can't have real high expectations, right?
No, but I mean.
At least just having him there.
Having him there, knowing he has that pull power. If he does come back, do you have any idea how you'd play it?
Oh, as far as like the third base? No, I think you keep Correa at third base.
Just try and DH him?
Find him at DH. I don't know where else you can put him. But, you know, he's got to get at bats. He's got to get at bats.
No, that 100%. He was your best hitter all throughout the season. And I think if you try and prorate it, because I understand Yordan came back and was hitting well, but before that he was problematic. I think he's still your best hitter all the way through the season. So you really want to get him in the lineup. That'd be a real boon to what you're doing here if you can get him back. You just have to forgive me for not finding a lot of hope and a lot of excitement in that possibility for a dude who's coming back off of an injury to be able to step in and immediately make the impact that's necessary. If he does, that's great. We know that, especially being at home, that's huge. Being able to, you know, utilize the Crawford boxes, especially with his particular pull swing.
Right.
I'm just not – I'm in a place where the belief is running dry.
In short,
be honest.
In short, your belief right now is in guys like Dubon, Paredes coming off an injury, Altuve coming off an injury, and guys like Victor Caratini and Yonner Diaz. That's where your hope is, and that's why it's such a difficult task.
But look, show it to me. Like, yeah, I'm at the point where I no longer with this Astros team can I just go, I believe that they'll do it.
No.
I'm now in a show it to me and I'll believe, and they've got a great opportunity starting with this three-game set at Daikin Park at home versus the Rangers.
Yeah.
So there you go. We're excited to see what they do there. Actually, excited is probably not the real word. It's cautiously.
Anxious.
Very cautiously watching what the Astros are able to do now that it's cutting time, right? Mm-hmm. You are no longer the lead. You can't just say, well, we have this lead to buffer. No. You got to go get it. So it starts tonight. Jack Leiter on the mound for the Rangers as your Astros are going out there and trying to get yet another win in the Silver Boot Series. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping, including Lopez. You want to talk your talk about these Aggies? We'll do that. Next. All right, let's get into what's popping here on a Texans game day Monday here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Let's go ahead. I want to set the stage. What's popping is this is what you got lined up for you. I'm going to do you a favor and set up your day. So myself and John Lopez, Figgy Fig, we're taking you to 2 p.m. as we normally do, right? You got Clint Sterner, Ron the Show Hughley, obviously T-Mill. They got you for an hour of a pre-game of sorts. They'll speed through a speedway edition of the drive before
a speed drive.
That's right. Before Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne, the fireball hit me already. they start pregame at 3 p.m. So those guys will start getting you ready, and they're out obviously in their normal spot in the southeast corner of NRG Stadium. They'll start getting you going with pregame as you know it and you love it. And then 6 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 610, Houston sports leader and the home of the Houston Texans, you'll hear Mark Vandermeer, Andre Ware, and, of course, John Harris getting you going for the home opener of your Houston Texans versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then, of course, postgame is as you usually expect it. Hopefully it'll be a victorious postgame with Sean Pendergast, Clint Sterner, and they'll take you well into the evening, I believe till midnight with that broadcast. That's what your Monday looks like here on Sports Radio 610.
Man, it just feels better when you got some tailgating already happening in studio with Nuff Said and Marty and barbecue and all that good stuff. Let's get it going. It's going to be a big day.
Yeah, big day indeed. What's popping from the weekend that was? A lot of things that happened. We can circle back to some of these as Marty from Nuff Said brings me a whole plate of barbecue. We are ready for this opener.
It's league, happening, you know
what I mean?
Baby.
Yeah. We are ready for it. But also, I have a feeling that you were ready, John Lopez, for what happened between the Texas A&M Aggies
and
Notre
Dame. I don't know
if I was. You weren't?
I don't know. Not that.
A 41-40 victory.
Who was ready for that?
It was a thriller.
I just want to know, was you standing up?
There's no way you could have watched that sitting down. Don't lie to me.
Yeah, I was in the car and I was standing up.
I was sitting
down. I was listening to it on the radio. I was standing up in my car.
I was sitting down. You guys know how I was.
I just get so now.
Look, my house was nuts. I wish I'd seen some videos. I had the kids over. The grandkids were getting scared when everybody was yelling and everything. And I was like, oh, what's going on? I kind of internalized and just focused and watched. Now I did do a couple of hard claps here and there.
How many let's goes did we get in?
Oh, a lot of let's goes. None from me. Maybe I texted one.
Are you like a hard clapper or just a fist pump?
I'm the loud hard clapper but very rarely. But here's the thing about that game. Now we're going to get into CF Boat tomorrow, the college football takeaways of the entire weekend. I do want to focus on the state of Texas today, and the headline is
we got time.
The headline is what Texas A&M and Notre Dame gave us, and it was, as you said, just an absolute thriller. One of the games, you know, best games you'll ever see. Great atmosphere. We talked Friday about the, you know, the thousands of Aggie fans that were there, and they were loud, and it was wild.
Yes,
you know, some of those things. It was just a great, great game. But in terms of like the football aspect, I think I mentioned this to Sean before the show because we were talking about it. Of course, he being a Notre Dame guy. That's a game that the Aggies that were not well coached and disciplined, and that's what this team is, they would have lost 38-10. They would have lost that game 38-10 because the very first series, I think you might have gotten one first down, but then you got stuffed, and you get a punt block for a touchdown right off the shoot. You're down 7-0 at Notre Dame Stadium, crowd going berserk. You lost all the life that you had. You know, they were frisky before the game and all that stuff. But instead of doing that, they just responded. They stayed in the game. They somehow ended up taking a lead by halftime. And then when they got back down again, kind of kept their cool, relied on the big playability of Marcel Reed, and specifically their two wide receivers, who are the best two wide receivers so far in the SEC.
Let me see a lot of Concepcion, man.
And Craver.
Man.
Yeah.
Those guys look legitimate.
Yeah. So I think the story here for the Aggies is not just, hey, you know, nice win, incredible win, but I think the makeup of that team is one that can consistently do things like this even when things go bad.
Yeah, it's a very, very, very good win for the Texas A&M Aggies. I don't think the Notre Dame, mind you, is 0-2 in ranked. They are the 24th ranked team on the AP poll at 0-2. I had a friend text me and be like, why is this the case? And I look at him like, that's two really good losses by 3 points and 1 point respectively.
Sure.
I don't hate that. However, we were talking to Sean Pendergast, clearly a very proud Notre Dame alum, very frustrated Notre Dame alum right now, though. That defense was a problem in this game. But interestingly enough, I wonder because we've talked to him. He very much is focused on the defense. I do wonder, though, how much that special teams hits Notre Dame fans right now, because that is typically under Marcus Freeman. One of the things that you have locked down, they're usually
punt for a touchdown.
They're not just good, they're great at special teams, and it was a little dicey in that game.
Well, and they had a kickoff return. By the way, that ended up being a blessing right before the end of the game. They had a kickoff return for a touchdown by Bussey. That might have been a blessing that you got called for a penalty, because they could kill the entire clock and they ended up driving the entire length of the field. Otherwise, Notre Dame would have had time at the end. But the other thing with
this, go ahead and do it.
What?
Go ahead and do it. I know you're about to do it.
What am I going to do?
Oh, go ahead. Let's see. I might have stepped out.
There's a couple things I kind of want to address with Lopez a little bit, because I felt like he was a little cocky, man.
He was. He's peacocking. Which, to be fair, when you win and your hated rivals lose, that's the time to peacock.
When did I peacock?
On the social medias?
I think that's absolutely true.
What is that for the listening audience?
Marcel Reed is what Texas thought Arch was going to be. Now, let's break this down. I'm not saying Marcel Reed's going to win the Heisman, but if Arch,
he's got a lot of people winning the Heisman right now.
If Arch Manning had the exact same game as Marcel Reed, you know, 360 yards passing,
two touchdowns and an interception,
37 yards rushing, fourth down at Notre Dame Stadium into the student section, and you complete that pass to the tight end, they would already be engraving his name on the trophy. Tell me I'm wrong.
Oh, the conversations would be all the conversations once you say Manning are outside one way or the other.
So that's my point. Like to do that in that environment, again, in, you know, all those things that I just mentioned, that's what they thought they were getting at Texas. The gritty, the clutch, the big numbers. All that's my point, and I stand on that.
Okay, I'll let. Yeah. I mean, please do. There's some more college football to be had when we get to CF Boat tomorrow. College football on a Tuesday. Before one more thing, we turn to our University of Houston correspondent.
That's one the other
Figgy
one.
Fig.
Oh yeah.
Tell me just how good did Connor Wegman in this University of Houston Cougars team. Actually, I probably shouldn't say Connor Wegman, because I mean Okosio looked the tight end looked really good. It felt like the defense showing, putting their you-know-what on the table and saying, no, we are for real this year under Willie Fritz.
Yeah, man, I was very impressed. And I know Colorado, I mean, I ain't going to sit here and act like they beat the number one team in the country or anything, but I felt like Colorado, that was a big test for them this year.
Oh, for sure.
And just the way they, the way the defense played, I feel like that second half, I think I might have texted y'all this. I'm like, man, it's the fourth quarter, and Colorado have 5 yards of offense.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, that's saying a lot, and not to mention the quarterback situation. I'm maybe I could be drinking the Kool-Aid. I don't know, but
drink it.
I'm pretty excited about this U of H team, man.
We were plugged in on Friday night watching this game. I was texting with you, big time, because you guys know since before the season even began, I've been telling folks, Connor Wegman is really good, guys. I am pulling for him. It's a lot of people are like, oh, he transferred. You know, he's dead to me. No, I am pulling for Connor Wegman. I think he's really good. He was cool. You know, they had a lot of reasons that they won that game. But we were real happy for him watching that game. And the other thing is, you mentioned the defense, and that's where they're going to be able to win. By the way, 2 weeks, Texas Tech. Mark your calendar.
Texas Tech, that's going to be a good game. I will say it now, but I intend to give them a lot of love next week. I have not been talking enough about this. No. Obviously, they put a lot of money into it. This Texas Tech team is a monster.
Aren't they averaging like 57 points a
game? It is really, really good. Apparently, if you spend money in college football, you can get good. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
So shout out to Texas Tech. Real quick, I do want to mention this. On the weekend that was in sports, it was a lot of fun things. How about, were you guys able to tape your eyelids up in order to watch what was a after midnight edition of boxing between Crawford and Canelo? And Terrence Bud Crawford, the pride of Omaha, Nebraska, does what the odds said he couldn't, but I think really smart boxing folks apparently believed that he was capable of doing, which is really running a fight versus Saul Canelo Alvarez and being able to walk out of that ring with more belts than I've ever seen in my life on one person.
I didn't watch it. I'm just going to be honest here. I was just keeping up because I was obviously glowing and reveling at that point.
That's right. You were like, look, man, my Saturday is booked. Yeah.
I was about 3 vodkas in and scrolling.
By the way, I could tell you was a little peed with Reggie in the group chat.
Oh, yeah.
We're not doing that right now. Yeah, that will have to happen tomorrow. We don't have time for that.
He threw a cold bucket of water or yo peacocking, man.
But not about the Aggies.
That was about Diego Pavia.
Yeah.
A player who I love, by the way.
Yeah, apparently so, huh?
I love him. That don't mean that he's a Heisman candidate. We're not doing that right now. Or if you want to, we could do that in Winners and Losers of the Week. We can hash that out a little bit later at 12:40. But, man, shout out to Bud Crawford, who absolutely controlled this fight. I mean, you have him going up 2 divisions into this welterweight weight class and going into a Canelo Alvarez, who historically has been a big puncher. It's kind of slid a little bit, and maybe he's been really trying to protect his record a little bit. Crawford came in and absolutely, I mean, fast hands, good defense. It was fun, maybe a little. I do wonder how fun it was from, like, the real casual boxer, although it was available on Boxing Fan, rather, available on Netflix, because the actual tactics of it were really gorgeous. But they were able to get in. They threw a little bit, and he really ran that fight with Canelo not able to really come in with the power.
I saw the one video of Canelo got popped, and even he was like, damn, where'd that come from? He goes,
yeah. Yeah.
Where'd that come from?
100%. So one thing I will say, with a fight of that magnitude, and obviously with Canelo ending up with all these belts, I would love to see a rematch of this and see if Canelo Alvarez, maybe if he takes this more seriously, because I do wonder how much he took Crawford seriously coming in. Maybe if that happens, if this could even go to another level. But a fantastic big-time fight out there in Vegas that was really cool to see. That's what's popping here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. A lot of fun stuff happening on this Monday, including Texans, Bucks. This is going to be a big prove-it game. What questions do you still have for this Texas team? What are the big questions as we head into the 6 p.m. kickoff for your Texans that you want to see answered? 713-572-4610. Let's run through those next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.